We're back with Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Before the break, we spoke with Bruce Pepich, the executive director of the Racine Art Museum, about the Robert Ebendorf retrospective that's currently on view there. Pepich gave us an overview of why Ebendorf is so important in the contemporary jewelry world and to the Racine Art Museum. Now we'll talk with the artist himself. Ebendorf joins me by phone now from his office in East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina. Bob, welcome to Lake Effect, and thanks so much for talking with us.
Well, it's a joy to receive the opportunity because it's always nice to sit down with mindful people and to discuss what I find exciting in my life and hopefully can touch a nerve with you all as well.
What I find exciting about the things that you've done in your life is that you have managed to incorporate so many different influences in your jewelry making, in your making. It's not just jewelry, but it started out there. And what was it about adornment? What was it about jewelry that first captured your imagination?
Well, I think that in high school, I took that first what we call the arts and crafts class, and at that time, we could do ceramics or jewelry or drawing, and I found that my interest went more towards jewelry. It could have been scale, and it could have been, I think, that I find still very, very important and exciting in my work is problem solving. How do I put an idea, you know, drawing on a piece of paper or an idea in my mind, how do I bring that idea or those marks on paper into form? So I think that there was an interest in making something, hands-on, solving a problem with materials.
Well, and your grandparents were tailors, is that
correct?
Yeah. So you came from a family that made things with their hands.
You know, and that light bulb did not go on in my life until I had to do a lot of public speaking, and I wanted to go back to my family in Kansas, and my grandmother was a Swiss, my grandfather was German. And then I started speaking and remembering going to the tailor shop with my father as a very young boy and being put upon the table where all the cutting and the pattern. And bingo, the light went on. I said, oh, my goodness, I do come from a family of makers. So I really do feel that it was in my DNA, but I just got off the track and got into the hard stuff and the stuff of with metal. But it is a celebration that I speak oftentimes with great fondness.
Well, also, and there's a quote that is in the book that the Racine Art Museum has put out about this exhibition, and it struck me, and I wrote it down, which was, assembling is a primal activity for you. It's something that you said to someone in some interview, and I love that idea of that problem solving, but the touching of the objects and the physical assemblage as being something that is absolutely fundamental to who you are.
And then, you know, on that same spin, often when I walk home from school or if I'm out on an outing, I'm always gathering. I have a fanny pack and I'm always bending over picking up this or that. I mean, a piece of wire, a broken bottle cap, a headlight that's been broken, or maybe even in the dumpster, you know, kind of, oh my goodness, let's see what's in there. And I also think that the sense of gathering, the hunt, the excitement of the hunt, but it's also, I think, it touches my feminine side of myself in the sense I gather, bringing home and nurturing it, putting together, washing it, laying it out, looking, examining it, and then taking it into the assemblage or into the construction. So I think that, you know, there is a very interesting primal sense that there that, you know, as I got more mature in age, I was able to perhaps look more intelligently at that process and making order out of chaos. Because many things when I bring them home, I lay them down and it is just a chaotic gathering of objects and then, you know, then putting some kind of order to them. But I come from, and historically, I come from a family of makers, not only the tailors, but also the lineage of the goldsmith and the silversmith. I mean, the tools that I use today and some of the techniques that I embrace and make love with are tools and techniques that were handed down from the early days. So I do have a strong sense of reverence to the family, to where I, the things that I do.
Well, it sounds like both in terms of your techniques and the tools, but also the objects that you collect and as you say, lovingly care for and then figure out what you're going to do with them. It's like you're curating all of these aspects of your life that then somehow come together into these wonderful pieces.
I love your word curating. I've never thought about it in that context, but in a way it is. It is a sense where I am being very critical about how I edit out and how what I bring in. I oftentimes think that my work is very much about basic celebration of design and color, and instead of maybe using diamonds and golds and pearls all the time and precious metals, I might be using a piece of metal off the street and a broken car fender piece. But these objects become my gold, become my precious material, and I treat them with that kind of respect.
When you're collecting and when you're out walking or thinking about the next project that you're going to work on, do you have objects in mind that you're looking for, or do you pretty much collect what catches your eye and then figure out from there what you're going to do with them?
Great question. I find that when I was doing very formal things for the church or for the temple or for the president of an organization, I had to do formal drawings that related to the idea, the color, the kind of materials, the stone, and design meeting, and we would talk about the drawings. And they, being my client, they knew that, okay, this is what I'm expecting. And then I would deliver that image to them in three-dimensional. But when I find now that since I'm much more a solo person and not doing those big commissions, but I find myself when I'm picking up things and I'm walking with them and looking at them, I have a tendency to conceptually begin to evolve them into a piece of adornment. Oh, I can do this, then I'll take that wire and go over here. Wow, that broken piece could go into here. So I find that I'm very fortunate that that excitement begins very, very early on, before I even get back to the work table.
It sounds like that when you're not on a commission, when you're allowed to just sort of let things happen, that the story that the objects are telling you is a little more organic. You get to listen to them a little more. Does that make sense?
Spot on, yes. So, and I will have to acknowledge I'm proud to be an academic person. I'm proud to be a teacher and be a part of an educational handing down information and techniques and a history of personal adornment and jewelry. But I also have the richness of being able to sit at my workbench and be open and do open field running. Let my mind be very open to ideas and pushing against and being the outlaw. It's much different than if I had to pay my overhead and the jewelry that I made every month had to pay my mortgage and my gas and oil. So I'm very fortunate, and I acknowledge the blessing of being at a university or at an educational experience that I can do what I love doing as an educator, but also love doing what I do privately on my workbench.
It sounds like it gives you a little breathing space. Having the steady paycheck and the ability to do all of those different things, but it also sounds like that kind of giving back, whether it's to your direct students or whether it's in workshops, that's part of what feeds you as well. Because everything I've read, people who've worked with you just say that you are so incredibly generous with your time and your knowledge and your insistence that they reach as high as they can go in their art.
I know that oftentimes these accolades and these comments are made, but I also realize that, you know, I do spend a lot of time mentoring. I mean, because I have, and in turn, I acknowledge having the richness of their blessings of creative thinking and problem solving. The other day, I was in Tennessee working for 2 weeks, and at the end of the time, I said to the people, they said, "Are you tired, Bob, going home?" I said, "You know what's interesting? Yes, I am tired, because in this class, every one of you, when we sit down and you ask me a question, each one of you had a different kind of problem you were trying to solve. So in a way that, you know, you made my mind so active, because professionally I didn't want to let you down. So I was stretching putting the bar high in challenges where I would not go because it's not it was not my work. It was your design, and you were trying to understand how to make it or how to solve a certain situation. So I find that I am so blessed that at, 76 years old, my mind is running, fast and furious every day, having this richness of exchange in an educational manner, also in an intellectual discussions, also in the sense of scholarly pursuit in our field.
It sounds like it feeds you as much as you feed
Absolutely.
Your students, yeah.
Absolutely. It is a wonderful two-way tennis match and tug of war.
There's another quote that somebody said to you, one of the things that you told her, which was, when you're making, make 15 and then pick the best 8.
Yeah.
Is that something that you do yourself?
Well, I know that if I want the body of work to get stinky and get feisty and put the bar high, the one off, the one piece, and then moving to another idea. But if I'm able to have the opportunity to make 6 to 10 of the same thinking on the same kind of energy of color and construction and making, the work does get deeper, and I begin to take more and more risk. But I do feel that if I do go deep, it just gets stronger.
When you look at the retrospective of your work that's happening right now at the Racine Art Museum, what goes through your mind?
You know, without getting emotional, it brings back many highs and lows of the journey, being in the forest and not seeing the meadow and being in the dark times of everybody's personal life, and then looking for the meadow and the sunshine. So for the Racine to give this opportunity to me, it's very humbling and very emotional that I have an opportunity to bring this collection of old and new pieces together and to share it with the going public and the richness that there has been a document, a wonderful publication to mark that, to go along with it.
So what's captured your attention and your imagination right now? Is there a particular object that has caught your fancy?
You know, it's interesting, of the years of my making, a person who is a very important person in my life and is no longer here, by the name of Hermann Junger, he was a well-known contemporary jeweler in Germany. He once said to me before his passing, "Bob, there will be work that will become an icon, will become like a footprint, which it will be published time and time again, and it will become kind of a signature." And, now thinking back, there are pieces such as the one on the cover of the publication. I mean, that piece has been published a number of times. And here it is. Once again, Bruce picked it out of all the objects there to put on the cover. You know, I just brought that up because I was quite excited and also stunned to see what was chosen for that purpose. And the same way with, there's another object, it's a brooch called The Man and His Pet Bee, which is a piece that's been photographed a great deal, or the piece that is at the Victorian Albert Museum, which is the paper and gold necklace that is in their permanent collection on view all the time. So there's certain objects, and I'm very excited to see in the catalog or in the publication what images Bruce chose to focus on, because I think the menu was rich, and it was a wonderful salad for him to put the right dressing with it.
I agree. It is beautiful. And again, the way they're photographed is just beautifully laid out. And were I you, I would be very proud of it, too.
Well, thank you. Looking forward to that.
So are you going to be able to come, and
yes.
Or have you already been?
No. They're going to have a soft opening, meaning that I will not be in there. We'll fluff around it. It'll just open on the date, as you know. And then I will come in the fall to do a talk and also a hands-on with those who care to spend a day or two with me working on some idea process and problem-solving with material.
Well, I hope that I have a chance to meet you then, and maybe I can come down and we can continue our conversation.
Oh, that would be marvelous.
I'd love to do that while you're working on something, if it's not too intrusive.
All right. But also, a very special thank you to you and the interest that you have, and also for the opportunity to share this with your audience.
Bob, it's such a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with us.
Thank you very much. I look forward to meeting you when I come.
American jeweler and metalsmith Robert Ebendorf spoke to us from his office at the East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina. The retrospective exhibit of his work is on view at the Racine Art Museum through January. We'll take one last break, and then Lake Effect essayist Carrie Carlson gets a makeover. Well, kind of. We'll hear about it in a moment when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.